Don't miss another fantastic contest opportunity from our friends at ExpressBet with the Preakness Stakes Challenge on Saturday, May 18th. Your $1,500 entry gets you a $1,000 bankroll and $500 going to the prize pool with prizes including NHC seats, a BCBC seat, a Pegasus World Cup betting challenge seat, as well as cash prizes. You can play online at ExpressBet or in person at Santa Anita Park. For more information and details on how to sign up, go to expressbet.com/tournaments. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Tuesday, May 14th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatale, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again. We've got a varied show for you today. Going to kick off talking about a new book that I had the pleasure of working on. JK will be here to go over every runner in this year's Preakness Field. And then we're going to close out with a special segment about this upcoming Preakness Challenge. I reserve the right to move these segments around in any way that I feel to. I may second guess the sequence, but I know where we're going to begin. And where we're going to begin is with a guy who you've heard a little bit on these airwaves, but not really. We've kind of been saving him to come on to talk about this very project. This is a book I had the pleasure of working on for the last several months or so. Really exciting for me to get back to book publishing, which is sort of where my roots are. Was an editor for a long time. And I have to say, in terms of information that horse players need, I feel very fortunate to have worked on several books that have been able to help you on your journey as a contest player. Working with Mike Maloney, I feel like we genuinely created one of the best books on the handicapping side. But now I feel like we've sort of have the perfect trifecta covering the very elusive betting side of the equation. The book is called A Better Way of Thinking, and Matt Miller is here with me now. Matt, how are things?
I am so psyched to be here after so many years of listening to you. It still is so strange to me to be a part of this rather than just a listener or observer. So thanks for having me.
I'm going to lose at least one download, or no, you'll listen back because we have other stuff on the show besides yourself. And I don't know, maybe you're one of these people who listens to themselves anyway. So hopefully you get to remain a listener as well. I'll start with a cheeky question for you that I did not prep you for. If you've got such an advantage in these areas, you know, as we've seen from the success you've had in the contest world, being a BCBC champion, etc., if you've got an edge, why would you give that away by writing a book about it?
That's a great question. And obviously, you know the answer to some extent, because I cover it in the book a little bit, you know, asking the very question, why would you tell us all this? And I have two answers. Number one, what is required to do well in the contest space is difficult. And so just telling someone how to do it, at least on the biggest stage possible, doesn't necessarily mean they can. It's a comfort level issue. I talk quite a bit about playing within yourself, within your budget, and not playing scared. And the reality is, in a lot of these big contests, despite maybe knowing how to do it a little better now, people are still going to be pretty scared. So I'm not too worried about waking up all sorts of competitors. The other reason is, and it's to the credit of the contest organizers, a lot of the plays now are public. And so how long do I think I'm going to be able to get away with employing a strategy before people realize, okay, the guy is, you know, there's a clear pattern here. He is working backwards from a target. He's setting interim targets. Right. It's not hard to unpack what I do by looking at the plays. And so I thought this was a nice chance to give back and try and help out, you know, all those people that I was for years who felt like he was better at the handicapping side than the betting side.
You hear that one all the time. I'm a good handicapper, but a bad bettor. The person who has that attitude, what are they going to make of A Better Way of Thinking, do you think?
I honestly think this has a chance to change their entire life. And that's not an exaggeration. This book is equal parts life advice and gambling, horse racing, bankroll management, you know, all of those concepts. And really, the way I think about things, one is just an extension of the other. I have such a, I don't know if it's a lawyerly approach, but it's just a very risk-reward, practical view of life. And I think people stand to benefit from that sort of exposure to that sort of thinking. It doesn't mean I'm always right. It doesn't mean that's always the proper way to think about something. But one of the things I've learned over time is just getting lots of perspectives is helpful. I'm going to go on just a teeny bit and say, in the handicapping world, look, you, for me, used to be the only game in town. You, In the Money has been fantastic and has been some of the best source of handicapping advice I've ever had. After meeting Howard Kravitz and listening to his show, I now have a second set of perspectives, and that's made me better. I'm not comparing the two of you, but just hearing two respected people look at a race gives me good perspective that I wouldn't have just from one perspective. And I think what I just said applies equally to life in this book.
I love that. And believe me, I take zero offense at you mentioning Howard. I had the pleasure of introducing you to years ago. So in the end, Matt, it's all reflected glory on me.
Absolutely. I couldn't be more grateful for that intro. Thank you.
I'm kidding. Howard has been a very valued member, tangential member of our team, who I've been very pleased to see go out in the world and do his own stuff and have some of his own accomplishments in the tournament world, which has been great. Let's get back to the sort of part of the central philosophy, because I think this is interesting, and we haven't really talked about this. One of the things that I think separates you is an idea that goes back a very long way. The first interview I think I ever did about the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge was with Maury Wolf, the great professional player. And I think one of the first lessons he said was, treat this like Monopoly money, or you're not going to be able to stand toe-to-toe and compete. Now, that's obviously one of the key ideas to what you do, but to get this to a question, how do you feel you've been able to adapt that idea, that mental jujitsu, to get into that state? You know, that idea was in Winning Contest Player however many years ago that was, but I don't feel like anybody's been able to sort of take it to the extremes that you have done. Why do you suppose that is?
Focus, motivation, lack of fear, and intense competitiveness to win. And one of the most important elements to that is lack of fear. It changes everything. When you look at when we're talking about a contest and a live bankroll contest like the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, I have a different way of thinking about these things. Even as my balance grows throughout the contest, I'm looking at this as a $10,000 entry game. I was asked the question on Seth Merrow's show yesterday, something about Drew's $97,000 bet in the year that he won the BCBC. And my answer, I think, might have been a little surprising to him when I said, in my opinion, he risked 10 grand. And Seth paused a second and said, oh, yeah, I get it. You're playing a game. And the fact that there are off-ramps or interim opportunities to bank profits and quit, I just don't care. That's not why I'm there. That's not what I'm doing. And that is a huge advantage in terms of enabling me to get to a goal.
We talk all the time on the show about people's handicapping personalities. When you're describing what you just did, I think about the idea that maybe the handicapping personality takes second stage to the betting personality, where clearly you're just looking at this very differently. And there's probably people screaming at us, or screaming at you more accurately, as you say that and say, well, how can you say that? It's not right. He could have just taken the 97. So he's risking the 97. Again, to get it back to a question, how would you describe your own betting personality?
Liberated. I keep coming back to 2017, a terrific day where I hit something out of character. It was quite large. We're not talking millions, but it was quite a bit. And it was enough that I could come home. And thankfully, I don't understand what happened that day to make me convincing that day, but got my wife to agree that this can be a private bankroll. And it was plenty. And it just changed everything. I stopped being afraid of losing. I got more aggressive. I developed strategies for staging bet sizing to give me a chance to get out even or ahead multiple times throughout the day, rather than just trying to grind myself into zero like I used to do. So again, kind of just getting back to the overall concept, for many, many years, I was a very average or below average player. And I feel like it's a gift that I'm acutely aware of what happened to turn that around. And I'm thrilled to be able to communicate that to Horse Racing Nation and friends and all that. And, you know, just ask my buddies how they've done since we've been talking about betting strategy. Their names are recognizable. They win contests. They do well. It's been a good time. And so hopefully this will help others too.
It's not just contests either. I mean, I can personally think of multiple days where having worked on the book with you led to a better result. I was not just blowing smoke in the quote that we almost used on the cover before. I had to bump myself at the end of the day. But there's a line that did remain in the foreword where I say, the only problem with Matt Miller's new book is I get a little depressed when I think about all the money I would have had if I'd read it 20 years ago instead of now. That's sincere, and I've seen it myself. And here's a key point. Lest people think, oh, well, Matt, you know, he was a lawyer, he's got money, he got this private bankroll, you know, that's all good for him, but what about me working within the constraints of a more, you know, blue-collar, everyday existence? What would you say to that player?
The person you just described is the person that I talk to quite a bit. You know, I give advice quite often to people, and everything I have to say can be scaled. And so if we want to stick in the tournament realm for a second, if you aren't a BCBC budget kind of player, maybe you are a $300 Saturday Naira Bets kind of contest player. These strategies work all the same in those contests too. And with respect to cash, it's actually a bone of contention with all of my friends who every now and then will start comparing, you know, how we did relative to one another. And I stop that immediately and say, look, you can find a bigger, better than me somewhere. And that's not going to make me feel small. Work within your own means, work within your budget. Define what's successful for you, and then feel great when you hit success. And it doesn't have to be relative to the amount of success that other people have. Focus on ROI if that makes you feel better. But I would just honestly stop looking across the street or across the fence or at other people and just focus on how you're doing. And waking up to go to the racetrack, you know, having your picks, having a betting strategy and coming home with five times your money or whatever it is that you did, it's an amazing feeling. It doesn't have to be millions of dollars.
You mentioned one of our partners in the Naira Bet Saturday contest. Another one that popped to mind as you were talking, and I'm not just saying this because they're sponsoring some content on this very show, but our friends at First Bet, in addition to a weekend contest like the Preakness one coming up, there's also feeders and ways of getting into that via live bankroll. What's your attitude about trying to qualify for these events for the smaller dollar player?
This is not meant. I feel like the overweight doctor telling the patient to lose weight. I love the concept of these feeders. I love the concept. For me, I don't find them necessarily worth my time. If I'm honest about how I'm playing and the level of effort I put in, it's often the case that I would probably be better off just buying into the event itself.
Sure. But if you're not somebody who enjoys the handicapping side of things as much as the betting side of things. I was asking that question more from the perspective of that weekend warrior player who might feel priced out by the BCBC in and of itself, but still have an ambition to get there.
Absolutely. And so this is what I mean when I say, you know, it's not for me, but it's for you. I actually think those things are terrific. And so they're great practice. They have great prizes. They give you access to contests that, if you're being responsible, might not otherwise be for you. But if you've won an entry, maybe you will feel comfortable enough to play it the right way without being scared. And so if this is a way to get into something that you otherwise couldn't get into, absolutely. I would say if you are able to pay your way into the event, I'm not trying to dissuade anyone from participating. I would just encourage you to be honest in looking at your record and see if your record tells you that you're better off just buying in or trying to qualify.
I think for a lot of people, the mental jujitsu required to play optimally is a lot easier when they have qualified. Some people, they qualify and then they feel like they've already won, and they play suboptimally and they take some money home and they take a few shots. And, you know, that's obviously not what the book advocates. It's not what I would necessarily advocate, but, you know, no judgment. This is a In the Money Players podcast is a no judgment zone, unless you're a Twitter troll. But in terms of the ability to, you know, maybe make that leap if you want to do it but haven't yet, the whole concept of feeding in, I think, makes a whole lot of sense and is something that should be considered. If you go to expressbet.com/tournaments, that's a place you can see the full list of all of those feeders. A few other questions I want to ask you, because you've hit on some interesting things that aren't even necessarily like deeply connected with the book, but I think are worth following up on. I'll get you first, though, to a very, very basic one. People who are interested, where can they read more about the book and where can they buy it?
A Better Way of Thinking is the title of the book. That is also the title of my website. And just being blunt, I've learned pretty quickly as a first-time author, selling these things on your own, you make an awful lot more of the money than giving it to Amazon. So for the time being, abetterwayofthinking.com, again, spelled better any way you want to, but the intent was to spell it like someone who bets. And you can buy there. And I say this not to make you cringe, Pete, but it's sincere. It's a $50 book, and I am positively convinced that $50 is going to be made up within a day. The first bad bet I save you from, or the first good bet I help lead you to. In the meantime, if you read this book and honestly don't feel it was that helpful and thought that $50 was stiff, come find me and I'll give you your money back.
That's confidence. I'll tell you what, I don't think you're going to have many takers on that, but I appreciate the idea of it. And you're somebody who stands behind those words. So I don't cringe. I appreciate that. All right. Back to the stuff that we didn't really, it's in the book, but we didn't talk about it that much. But I think it's interesting, again, focusing more on the lower bankroll player. And I certainly don't want to get into all your ideas about betting and how to structure your betting day at the track. People are going to have to buy the book if they want to get all of that. But there is this idea, you know, so many people go down the rabbit hole, and I'm guilty too. I mean, how many shows do we do where we talk about a pick five? Why do we do it? Well, we do it because a lot of people love the idea of betting a little to win a lot. We do it because it's our clients often want us to promote a certain pool like a pick five. And we do it because it's, frankly, it's easier for the guests. If a guest is coming on, they want to do the 100% job on the races. It's a lot easier to do the 100% job on five races in the pick five than it is if I sit there and tell them, you know, ideally, if all we cared about was the best possible content and it's the only thing that mattered, I'd probably tell a guest, and I didn't have any respect for anybody else's time, I'd say, do every race and let's talk about your three favorites. It's not practical in the real world. Anyway, there's a lot of reasons we talk about the pick five, but the high risk nature of these bets means you're going to necessarily have a lower strike rate. Honestly, they can be extremely trappy for the same type of player that we're describing, even though he or she may be naturally inclined to put a ton of a huge percentage of their bankroll into these bets. One thing that I love that you mention in the book is you want to play these bets, but maybe consider playing them in a group or with friends. You talk about the crew of people you go to the track with. You talk about how important that camaraderie is to the whole experience. I think very specifically this idea of playing with partners is something that could allow a lot of the people listening to unlock a lot of the power that's in A Better Way of Thinking. Do you think I'm onto something here? Do you think this is an underrated concept? And what advice would you have for somebody looking to play with partners?
Playing with partners is hard because depending on the context, it isn't always easy to agree on what to do. You get three handicappers looking at races and you have three different opinions, and then getting them to agree on a ticket isn't easy. I think what often happens with these group tickets is that everyone kind of tosses in their opinion and you end up with a pretty spready ticket that represents, you know, everybody's viewpoints. I happen to be a big fan of those. The advice I give, though, is just make sure you're scaling your bets appropriately. So if you imagine the 401k presentations you got when you started your first job and they showed you the investment pyramid, and they said, oh, your safest bets should be at the bottom of the pyramid and the riskiest should be at the tippy top. Right, that these pick five bets are at the tippy top. These are risky bets. It's a low strike rate. Win bets, spot picking should be the basis of your play. But if getting in with a bunch of buddies on a spready ticket to make the day super fun for not a ton of money, I'm a huge fan of that. And, you know, one of the strange things is, and Pete, you can tell me if I'm crazy or not, usually when you're alive to a big score, most people aren't doing the math about their percentage. They're just kind of psyched as a team to be alive to a big score. And so your individual share almost doesn't matter as much as what you're trying to do as a group. It's a lot of fun.
That's very interesting. The other way of approaching it, and I've no judgments about that way. A lot of this comes down to who you are and what you want to do. You know, it's a team. Maybe the team needs a coach or a quarterback, and you have somebody who's going to do their best. And with, you know, playing multiple tickets, this is not impossible to amalgamate those opinions and yet still play an efficient ticket. And as long as everybody's on the same page, I think that's another way you could approach it, where you're getting a lot of those advantages without the disadvantage of being too overly spready. And a lot of this comes down to game selection. You know, maybe on a derby day, that, you know, quote unquote overspready way is still okay. Day in, day out, I wouldn't want to see that as much. Day in, day out, I feel like I like that idea more of have somebody on the team who's a real expert in how to construct these tickets and work the Excel spreadsheet or ticket maker or some combination of the two. And then everybody gets the benefit of that efficiency while being able to keep the capital they're spending within the correct ratios of that investing pyramid. As you were discussing the investing pyramid, Matt, I was making a note to myself that this is a good idea to come back to, because I think so many players in real world, so many players in horse racing have that investment period exactly upside down.
Totally. Their day starts with the pick five. Maybe they end up making a few win bets here or there if they feel like it. And, you know, I don't want to spoil the whole book here, but I talk quite a bit about those sequences. And very often there may be a best bet in the middle of that sequence. And how many listeners can relate to that best bet hitting in the middle of the sequence and them cashing zero as a result because some long shot wins in leg four, leg five? Right. I would look at that person and say, number one, nice pick. Number two, you're not betting this right. You put your money all in the risky stuff. You have to hit that best bet independently of everything else. I mean, you're making this game incredibly difficult for yourself, and you're making the swings incredibly wild if you're basing everything through pick fives. It's a strategy that for me didn't work for many years. I'm not sure I realized that until, it's a stupid comment, but I didn't realize it until I realized it. Someone telling me that didn't really help. It was when I found a better way to do it through these tournaments that I started realizing many of my mistakes around the other ways I used to bet.
there's so much more in the book specifically about this idea of what should happen when your best bet wins, etc. We're going to leave that for the book. I've got one more question for you. Obviously we could do another 2 hours here, Matt, and I don't think people would get bored, but you know, we do want them to buy the book at some point. Maybe down the line, we'll do an audio update or something like that. But I wanted to talk about, you know, you talked about where you were as a player. You talked about the score that liberated you. But how did you go through the mental process of coming up with the ideas in the book? I mean, did you have to take time and go away and look at years of results and formulate a new plan? It does seem like that liberation, you're describing it almost just as a eureka moment, but I feel like there had to be some other planning that went into all the things you've incorporated into your play since you hit that big score to bring you from where you were then to where you are now. And interestingly, I don't know the answer to this. This isn't in the book. And it's something I probably should have pressed you on to put in the book, but I just thought of it now, so it'll just live on this podcast.
So I have a couple answers. One is I'm just, and this comes through in the book in all sorts of ways, many of them quite funny. I'm really self-aware. I'm acutely aware of what I'm good at, what I'm bad at. I don't take it as an ego hit when I'm bad at something. I take it as an opportunity to fill those gaps by finding someone who's better or that can teach me something. And so, I was just very aware of how I was doing. And I frankly felt that the way I was doing it was the way everyone did it. And in a lot of ways, I think that was kind of right. It was the liberation of not being afraid. It was that combined with the fact that at this very time I was finding tournaments, and the tournaments actually helped to ground my cash play.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Tournaments are a good time. The added equity in the prize pool makes them a good deal if you actually have a chance to win. And the size of the tournament, the dollars invested, the amount that you have to build to, provides an overall framework that for me is able to fit in to a broader day of betting. So the tournament isn't the only bet I make on the day. I'm betting cash as well. And the size of the tournament and the projected prize pool have helped me quite a bit in my bet sizing on the side. So it's all kind of integrated. I know this sounds complicated. I think we do a good job in the book of making this sound a little easier and simpler to follow. But the idea is integrated play, tournaments with cash helps quite a bit, but it's really just finding where you're comfortable and being honest about assessing where you're doing well and where you're not. I'll ramble for one more second and just make, you know, whatever ADW you play on, there are ROI trackers. There are results trackers. I don't know how every one of these works, but in a lot of cases, you can sort and go right now and see what your ROI is on certain bet types. Is it better on win bets? Is it better on pick fives? I certainly have my guess as to what people are going to find. But if you aren't good enough to assess yourself honestly in real time, that's a very fair way to go back and look and see what you've actually been doing.
It's such good advice, and something that Mike Maloney talks about in Betting with an Edge as well, which is a terrific companion volume to this, and we'll have to get back into print very, very soon. So if we were looking to incorporate one extra paragraph in the book about this stuff, what I would say, what I'd go back at you and say is, it's almost like when you were playing the horses before, it was more fun. It was just more about fun and distraction, and you didn't necessarily see an opportunity in that strict parimutuel world. And then you had this twin situation occur between having the score with the potential for the bankroll and the emergence of tournaments, where you saw an opportunity, and then the plan sort of emerged out of that, the conglomeration of events, especially with the twin benefits of tournaments, the grounding and the extra equity from there that really became the thing that propelled you to think about this much more analytically than you ever had before. Is that fair?
That's fair. And the other thing that I learned in that process, and this is a little, you know, I'll say the word cringeworthy again. I know I said that before. For handicappers, it's a little cringeworthy, but I've learned it isn't just the best handicappers that can win. And I think in the old days,
it's 100% true.
I would have conceded to that and just said, if I'm not a great handicapper today, I'm not going to win. And today, there's, I know this sounds ridiculous, I see almost no correlation between the two.
That's taking it farther than I would, but how can you be so sure? You know, this is an ancient debate. What's more important, handicapping or betting? You sound like you have no doubt. Why is it that you believe the betting is so much more important than the handicap?
I can give all sorts of smart-ass answers. There are plenty of days that I will sit down on a Saturday to play without cracking the PPs. I get everything I need from the board. I get everything I need from an innate sense of where the odds are going to be. And as we talk about in the book quite a bit, I utilize daily doubles as a nice opportunity to catch overlays if I think that the bettors aren't betting those doubles sharply. I don't even know the names of the horses most of the time, right? I don't even bother to look at the PPs. I'm looking at 2 1-2 shots in two consecutive races with a daily double paying 9-1. And I say, that's crazy. And, you know, I do a teeny bit of looking into it to say, yeah, I think these horses are going to stick at 1-2. All right, the daily double drifts down to 7-1 after I bet it. It's still a terrific bet. And so I'm not trying to be Mr. Cool, and I'm not trying to disrespect handicapping, but there's lots of ways of doing this. And looking at it as a numbers game and from a math perspective and price shopping for overlays, that is a different way of doing it. And I'm not telling people, do it my way, not yours, but at least be sensitive that there's a different way. You know, I'll call it a better way of thinking, but that's up to you.
I sort of derailed you as you were answering my previous question, if you wanted to go back and button that up, though. Ending with the book title is always elegant, and we could do that as well.
All right, so remind me the question, and then I'll tell you how we'll end it.
I was hoping you'd remember. No, what were we talking about before? We were talking about your evolution as a player, and I was trying to characterize how the things that led you to developing your system. And I talked about it in terms of the phrase that you had used about tournament play grounding you, and also the equity in tournament play. And I got the sense that there was more than just the betting aspect that you wanted to throw in there before I asked you that blunt question about handicapping and betting.
Well, there's definitely an emotional aspect. And look, I've been pretty clear in this discussion and throughout the book, I enjoy talking about times that I wasn't particularly successful. You know, it's a little easier to do that now that things are better, but I'm very cognizant of where I wasn't very good. And I had a couple of opportunities at the BCBC, certainly before winning or before Brad's year of winning, where things didn't go well. I got up to the last race with a chance to do some real damage and pulled back. And that was a career moment for me where I couldn't regret it anymore today. It's something I would never do today. I learned a lot from it. And look, I walked away with money. And so it's not like I blew it all and I have regrets that way. But I do have a particular regret in my Breeders' Cup history that caused me to become a more aggressive player than I certainly was initially programmed to be. So yeah, I mean, I think everyone's got these moments in their past where they're aware of where their motivation changes or what they're trying to do changes. And like I said, I've just been acutely aware of mine. And after so many years of being so average or below average at this, I just couldn't be more psyched to kind of tell the world, hey, here's one person that broke through. here's the way they did it. And this, in a lot of ways, is accessible to everybody. You don't need special skills. You don't need to be the best at anything. Give the book a shot and see if it helps you out.
The book is very prescriptive, and I think it can help a lot of people. Again, I put myself in that number. It's called A Better Way of Thinking. You can buy it over at abetterwayofthinking.com. You can check out that website, too, for extra info. There's going to be some outtakes and other things from the book up there, as well as Matt's various media appearances. Matt Miller, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Pete.
We're thrilled to be partnered with Hawthorne Racecourse for this 2024 season. Large field sizes, including great turf racing, are back in action this summer at Chicago's hometown track. With a 12% takeout on win place and show wagers, Hawthorne has been quietly and consistently producing great cards, with horse players starting to take notice. Be sure to check out Hawthorne this summer and take advantage of a great racing product at a great price. For more information, be sure to check out inthemoneypodcast.com/Hawthorne.
Very happy next up to welcome back to the show. Man, we frequently bring on these airwaves to talk about things going on in the ExpressBet/FirstBet contest world. He's the guy who is essentially the managing director. I don't know what his exact title is regarding these contests, but it's something like that. He basically runs them. He's Tyler Frausto. Tyler, how are things?
Doing well, Pete, and you're absolutely correct. There is no real title to what I do in tournaments, but I do manage them in some aspect or another.
Well, you've been having a lot of success. The first Kentucky Derby Challenge was a huge success, 190 entries in the end. Maybe I'll start off just by giving a shout-out to the folks that won the top prizes there, starting with Brett Wiener, who finished with nearly 25,000. And for that, he got a BCBC seat, NHC seat. He got a World Cup, a Pegasus World Cup seat, and a big chunk of cash as well, 47,000. Added to that. Very impressive stuff. I'm not going to give all the prizes for the rest of the big winners, but I will name check them. Tony Joe, Bruce D'Agostini, Chris Podratz, Edward Peters, Benjamin Posen, Mark Strife, Justin Dew, and Brian Lanzurica were the top nine in that one. But that's in the past. We may have an interview related to that on this show or another show if I can get things organized with that. But I definitely want you here today to talk about what's coming up this weekend, because there's another major contest opportunity for players. We've read some ads about it already, but what do you guys got cooking for the Preakness Betting Challenge?
Yes, and going back to the Kentucky Derby Challenge also, one thing that wasn't really mentioned was the Pegasus World Cup Betting Challenge seats were also given the option of doing a California Crown Betting Challenge seat. So you could have picked either one if you won. And we're going to do a lot more of these going forward when we're kicking off our new California Crown, which is at the end of September. So that's a new contest that is coming up. But that was one of the things that was offered. Preakness right around the corner. We're doing a little bit of the same. We're doing some BCBC seats as awarded as prizes, NHC seats, and again, California Crown or Pegasus World Cup seats. And we're paying out to fifth place in cash. So it's pretty much going to be the same format, five races, $100 a piece minimum, the entire bankroll of $1,000, and bet your entire bankroll. Just have fun with it, win some money, and we'll give you some more if you come up on top.
I love it. That's a great format, very flexible. I know players like that. How has the early response been? I mean, that was a huge bunch of participation you had for the Derby, especially with this really interesting looking above average Preakness field that's going to be on hand. Do you think you might get close to those numbers for this Preakness Challenge?
Yeah, I'll be really excited to surpass. My goal, I'm always very logical. I always try to get 120, but I'm always shooting for like 150 or so. But if we get up to 190 again, I would be very, very happy. And yes, the fields are great. I think it's a great betting card coming up potentially. So, I mean, it all depends on how the players react to it. And I hope they do, because the prizes obviously at Kentucky Derby Challenge were great. And I think they fought for those. And we're offering the same here.
Feels like the card is going to be pretty good from the early work I've done on these stakes. We're doing this without a draw, but also based on the strength of Friday. I think it's going to be racing that people are going to want to get involved with. Hopefully the weather cooperates for us in Baltimore as well. You're there already down in Baltimore. What are the vibes like? Can you tell it's not just an ordinary week of racing in Maryland?
Well, right now I'm standing right here on the stretch run, and it's actually beautiful out. Sun's out. I know there are some rain showers predicted throughout the week, but I think this weekend's going to be great. I actually played a little bit of Pimlico last weekend. When I played, I played Saturday or Sunday. I played a little bit. I dabbled in it a little bit. I got some nice little prices, so I think the players will be happy with what we have going on here.
That's another reason, Tyler, why you do such a great job running contests like the likes of Nate Newby and Jim Goodman and Brian Skirka. But before you understand the player's mentality, because you're a player and you like to get involved and fire away, which is very cool. Let's get back to the Preakness Challenge for a second and tell people the best way to get involved. Is there an on-track option, or are we looking at playing online? And where can folks find more information? And most important of all, reach out to you and get themselves signed up.
Yes, so there is an on-track option, Santa Anita Park. Unfortunately, we are unable to offer it at Preakness just due to some technical issues with that. But we do offer it at Santa Anita Park where you can come and play. Georgia Tuzar will be there to host y'all. And also on ExpressBet. As always, we host all of our tournaments on ExpressBet now for the most part, so it will be hosted on there as well.
I don't want to jinx it, but I'm going to risk this just by saying that I've had good experiences actually with the internet at Pimlico the last couple of years, to the point where I was doing live broadcasting from there just off the in-house Wi-Fi. So if you are going, don't take that as a negative. You're still going to be able to get onto the ExpressBet platform and fire away. Give folks the best place to sign up.
Correct. That's a great one. ExpressBet.com/tournament is all you have to do. Just log in there and check them out. You see all the details and the official rules and register right there.
Love it. I know you guys have a lot of other promotions and interesting bets coming up. You can find the full list of those over at Preakness.com. I was curious for you personally, if there was one particular wager or particular race or particular horse you're looking forward to getting involved with this weekend.
I have not even opened the form yet at all. I'm a last minute bettor, unfortunately. I'm either getting shut out or I'm getting my bet in last second. And it's a toss-up whether it's a good bet or not. Usually if I get shut out, it wins. If I get it in, it loses. So who knows?
That's very funny. As you said that, I had a vision of a player that had the pleasure of interviewing many times, the late Jose Arias, who the NHC Hall of Famer. He had a very much of a reputation like that. Not the whole if I get it in, it loses part, but the idea of it was last minute for him, and a guy who was a little bit famous for getting shut out, whether it was a late pick four at Los Al or a bet at the final table of the NHC. But boy, when he got them in, did he have a tremendous ROI. Any chance to shout out the champ, Jose Arias, on these airwaves? One of the first interviews I ever did for DRF was Jose the year when he won the NHC. So just an excuse to shout him out as somebody who spent a lot of time at Santa Anita, such as yourself. I assume you knew Jose.
Absolutely, and that shout-out's much deserved. He was the king of the early pick four at Los Alamitos, without a doubt, as long as he could get it in on time.
Great stuff. I think his friends will appreciate that this is a loving tribute. We're not giving the memory of Jose a hard time here. Truly one of the fun guys to be around, and not many in the contest world who've had more success than he did. Maybe we'll have somebody qualify for the NHC this weekend at the Preakness who will go on to that kind of glory. I know you're very proud of the amount of people you send to both the big tournaments, the BCBC and the NHC, every year.
Yes, I mean, I love working together with Breeders' Cup and NCRA to help feed their contests. I mean, obviously, the seats help stimulate my tournaments. We all work together. It's all a cyclical process in a way.
No doubt. And you guys are among the leading qualifiers for that event, along with, I know that Monmouth, you guys, I don't know if you have a friendly rivalry or what, but between the two of you, I would imagine it's close who sends the most people to the big tourneys.
Yeah. And much love to Brian. I mean, he does an amazing job himself, and he actually partners with us on some tournaments, and we host some of his tournaments on ExpressBet as well.
ExpressBet.com/tournaments. That's the place to go, not just to check out the Preakness Challenge, but the full contest. And there's also feeders and qualifiers on there, we should point out. If you're listening to this early in the week, get on there and win your way in. Why not, right?
Yes, there are $80 feeders that could earn your way into the $1,500 this weekend.
Very, very good opportunity. Appreciate you, Tyler, coming on here. Look forward to seeing you in person down there. Will you be at the ABR pre-Preakness party on Wednesday night?
Yes, I will be there to support TAA and ABR.
Awesome. We love those organizations. Hopefully you'll get a chance to come see us. If you have any questions, heck, you could ask us in person there, or feel free to reach out. Tyler, best way for people to get in touch with you personally?
Wagering Tyler is my handle on X or Twitter formerly, or also at my email, tyler.frosto@first.com.
And for me, I'm on Twitter at LoomsBoldly, but probably the best thing to do, just go to InTheMoneyPodcast.com and shoot me a note through the contact page over there. That goes right to my personal email. Happy to answer your tournament questions. And I'm proud of my role a little bit in this space, Tyler, as a tournament Sherpa. If you tell me what kind of player you are, what your bankroll levels are, I'll point you in the direction of a tournament that can hopefully enhance your experience as a horse player. That's the goal anyway. Tyler, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me, and good luck to everybody playing the Preakness this weekend.
It's Preakness week. Great betting opportunities for horse racing. Great betting opportunities for sports as well if you are already someone who has the Cut app on their phone. Cut is a great new way to bet, a social betting platform with terrific pricing and a bonus too, 10% on your signups if you use the code ITM24. Do not miss this opportunity to be handed free money. Simply no better way to bet the NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, than on the Cut app. And you can bet other things as well, politics, pop culture, anything with a verifiable outcome. You can challenge your friends. You can look to the public bets that are available. You can make public bets of your own. And I'd say if you put them up at the price, about 90% of them get matched. In my experience, this is a great site that everybody should be checking out. Go to the App Store, download the Cut app, and use that promo code ITM24. Get betting with Cut today. Next up on the show, want to take a second to do our Adelphi Performance of the Week. Very happy to have Adelphi Racing Club back in the mix. As many of you know, I'm not just a guy who reads ads for Adelphi Racing Club. I'm also a member. And boy, I think, are we poised to have some fun this year. Gem Mint 10 made his return to the races, just missing recently. That was a terrific effort that should set him up for a great season. And Skytown, this promising two-year-old, has just shipped up to Belmont. Very excited to get to meet all the new partners involved in this horse. Who knows? Maybe if you're out there listening to this, you're one of them. As for the performance of the week, we're going to highlight Silver Knot's run last weekend at Belmont. This was the kind of performance in terms of visual and speed figure, the 106 on the buyer scale, that's going to make you think there are some more valuable prizes for this one. Been well-regarded since a two-year-old for Godolphin and Appleby, but Silver Knot now really coming into his own, delivered a terrific performance in this race. Obviously, the race was run to suit. It was almost as if his stablemate, who was actually bet harder than he was a rabbit for him. That was not the case. This was team tactics. They were, you know, one going from near, one coming from farther back, trying to get the job done. But the figure Silver Knot ran, you know, that speaks for itself. 106 is rarefied air, grade one USA turf stuff. With Appleby having the satellite yard here, you know, we're going to be seeing more from this one again. As for Adelphi Racing Club, I've told you about them many times before on this show. Like-minded individuals, gives you a chance to get involved in a variety of different horses and be part of the club with great hospitality experiences available, whether you're racing downstate or upstate at Saratoga. To learn more, you can reach out directly to Matt Kater. You can check out the website, adelphiracing.com, or reach out to me. I'll tell you more about my experience and very much encourage you to get involved with our friends over there. Best way to reach me is through the contact page over at inthemoneypodcast.com. That goes straight to my home email, and look forward to coming back at you many times this year with many more Adelphi Performances of the Week.
PTF and JK back with our runner by runner guide for this year's Preakness Stakes. JK, you excited about this one coming up, this run for the Black Eyed Susans in Baltimore?
It's always exciting, right? Because in most situations, I guess occasionally it's not the case, but in most situations, there's still the idea, the possibility of greatness. There's still a chance for a triple crown. Mystic Dan getting into the starting gate will be as exciting as you need it to be to see what happens. Selfishly, I think maybe I'm rooting for Mystic Dan because I think it'd be a lot of fun to have a triple crown at Saratoga on Fox. I think that'd be a lot of fun for racing in general, but we'll see. It's always a lot of fun though. The Black Eyed Susan, they do a great job at the Black Eyed Susan's at the Preakness. And so it should be a lot of fun.
Let's get into this, JK. We'll get to the specifics on Mystic Dan and every single horse in the race. Let's start with Mugatu. I'm going to keep it simple on this one. Unless you're a really big Zoolander fan, I don't see this one on many tickets.
No, just has to get faster. I mean, there's not a way in which I can come up with a creative story, right? I mean, he closed a little bit at 181-1 in the Bluegrass and was beaten 7 lengths. I mean, I guess he ran better than he was supposed to run, but is he still anyone that you see getting the weather vane painted in their silks? I wouldn't knock them running in this race. Who, you know, you deserve it with the opportunity of the Bluegrass and some of the other races, but it doesn't make any sense to me.
No, looking very dangerous in a first level allowance in a few weeks. I'll say that much for the horse, but outgunned and outmanned. Let's get to number 2. Uncle Heavy started the career at Parks, not a place always associated with Triple Crown starters, though it is where Smarty Jones came from. It's a nice-looking horse. Has shown some guts in the races, but I just don't know that this horse is going to be good enough to make an impact against this field, especially because I feel like probably ultimately going to be a best going a mile or shorter. Am I underrating Uncle Heavy?
You know, the Preakness is always one of those races where you're going to have the big-name horses from the Derby, and the horses that haven't run in the Derby are going to be ignored completely. You can think, I think when Big Brown won, right, he was 1-5 or whatever it was, but a bunch of prices came behind him. I feel like horse Ichabod Crane hit that trifecta behind him at a big number. Uncle Heavy feels like that type of horse. While the rest of them are trying to win, Uncle Heavy and Irad Ortiz might take back, make one run, hope for a meltdown, and pick up third or fourth. Outside of that, I can't think of anything creative with Uncle Heavy.
Still sounds like one you might lose on some tickets in the deep verticals. Very interesting. Let's move on to number 3, Catching Freedom. Speaking of deep verticals, this is a horse that I think has a very good chance to run third or fourth, but I'm splitting hairs here in that I really don't love him, especially at the likely price he's going to be as a fancy Derby runner who certainly ran okay in that race. Coming back in 2 weeks in the Preakness, he's a big name, but I think he was probably flattered by the pace shape in the Derby. Not sure he will be here. Like him for third and fourth, probably going to leave him out of first and second. Where do you stand with Catching Freedom?
Yeah, it's funny. This race is really, it's so much less about the individuals and who I think is the most likely winner. Because I don't have the strongest opinion on who's the most likely winner. But I do know there's going to be a handful of horses that are just completely bet out of whack. Catching Freedom is one of them. Catching Freedom, who ran well in the Derby, right? If you run fourth, beating a length and a half in the Derby, that you ran well. However, if we believe this to be true, which is that the Derby's pace was fast and the race fell apart, you cannot get overly excited about Catching Freedom, who seemed to be picking up pieces. Now, he maybe was a little bit closer to the pace than it might have looked, but still, no matter how you shape it, he was a closer, closing into a fast pace, and one that likely will be the third choice. It will be a cheeky alternative for a lot of people, and I cannot get behind Catching Freedom in this spot. I think he'll be extremely overbet, and likely, I don't think he'll be the most overbet horse in the race because that's just not the way that works in the Preakness, but I think he's going to be overbet for sure.
That's an interesting question, one that we could parse and will parse farther when we do our other shows this week. We've got a live stream. The live stream will have happened by the time this video drops, but you can go back and look at the archive for our Pick 5 get through for this Saturday card at Pimlico. We're also going to have a pro player show with Duke Matisse. That's the kind of show where we're going to do video this time. And that's the kind of show where we get into these questions of like defining overbet and what it means relative to the field, et cetera. Make sure you catch those things on YouTube while I'm doing a little bit of housekeeping, giving out some interesting stuff. And before we get to the heavy hitters in the 4 and 5 gates for this year's Preakness, let me also encourage folks to check out the first Grand 3 Pick'em. This is a free contest with a chance to win $5 million. All you have to do, it ain't easy, is pick the superfecta in 3 races, starting with the Preakness on this Saturday. Give you an opportunity to go to inthemoneypodcast.com/grand to get more information and to make your picks. And you got that chance to win $5 million if you get these three races right. But somebody's going to walk away with $100,000, that is. And it's a free roll. So make sure you check out the first grand pick'em. Fourgate, Muth, this horse will be your favorite coming out of that Arkansas Derby win where he dispatched the Derby winner rather handily. He's been training up to this. And this horse, I think, is a deserving favorite. The question is, what price should he be? Really interesting here, JK. The morning line of 8-5, that sounds pretty reasonable to me. In England, up until yesterday, he was odds on. He went odds against this morning. Maybe those prices are going to converge. I don't know. I really like this horse, but do I like him at even money? Not really. I really start to like him if he gets closer to that USA morning line. We're not going to know till the off, obviously. To me, he's the most likely winner, but I'm not sure this is the horse I want to pick in this video with the uncertainty about where this price is going to land. Give me your overall thoughts on Muth.
Well, the problem with Muth is that he's going to be bet like he ran a 106 buyer speed figure in the Arkansas Derby, but he didn't. He ran slower than that. And that's the problem I have, is that while he is the fastest horse and he is from a Hall of Fame trainer that wins this race, and he is a fresh horse, and he is coming here pointing to this spot, and he does have all this speed, and he did beat Mystic Dan. All of those things are all great. But to me, they just don't line up with what the price he's going to be by the chance that I actually think he's going to win. He's not a horse that I'm going to try to beat in multi-race wagers if I have other strong opinions throughout those cards, throughout the card, that pick five or pick six or whatever I might be playing. But he's just – and he's a horse that probably is going to win. But, man, at the price he's going to be, he just does not get me going. I'm going to have to take a wagering stand against him. Not a stand against him from a win standpoint, but for a stand against him from a wagering standpoint. I just think he's going to be overbet. Talented as he is, he just isn't that 10-point buyer edge that he's going to be bet like he has.
98 was the buyer speed figure in the Arkansas Derby. That's slower than the 100 that Mystic Dan was awarded. Folks are going to say, okay, he beat Mystic Dan. Well, when we get to Mystic Dan, we'll talk about the circumstances as far as that one went. Let me just drill down one thing on Muth. You say he's going to be overbet relative to his chance. What's his chance? I mean, do you think he's – I think he's not quite as short as 50-50 to me, but, you know, he's getting there. Like, what, how many times out of 100 does he win this race?
I mean, I would say he probably wins it half the time. You know, okay. I just
would be odds against, though, which would make it not a bad bet then.
Yeah, I just, JK tries, math fails. I just, he's not an even money shot to me into the teeth of a Derby winner who I believe ran a pretty damn good race.
Let's get on to that Derby winner. And there's so much to discuss about him. I want to start by going back and talking about the Arkansas Derby. Yes, seemingly Muth handled him easily. But I think when you look at those two trips, it's fair to say Mystic Dan, with the trouble he had, being a bit against the flow, they were. I'm not going to say he was best or anything like that, but I'm going to say, I think it's fair to say that he was closer to Muth than that margin of victory suggests. Then there's the Derby. You and I both said that he was not the best horse in the Derby all in all. But at the same time, I think there's people out there who are underrating his Derby performance a little bit in terms of pace dynamics. This was a pace that collapsed. He was close up to it. In the Money Media's own Justin Christine made the case that he still thought it was a pretty perfect trip, given that a lot of the speed that faded had reasons to fade other than the pace that day. And he did certainly get that dream run through on the rail. Look, you put it all in the hopper. I'm going to say his Derby was probably a little bit better than that bear speed figure suggests, given the fact that he was so close to that fast pace. I still can't shake the idea that last time 18-1, this time 5-2, last time was probably the time you wanted to have him. But this is a horse that still makes a lot of sense. He has to be considered one of the key contenders in this race, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's going to be shorter than 5-2. He's a Derby winner. And here's the problem. Is if this race was taking place any other time of the year, right? You just change the names, call it the Holy Bull to the Florida Derby, call it the Whitney to the Woodward, call it the Haskell to the Travers, call it whatever you want to call it. Mystic Dan would not be as overbet, but because he's the Derby winner, from a win standpoint, he's going to take win money that I don't think he quite deserves. Although I do think he is a likely winner of this race. And if I knew that he wasn't going to catch unfair Derby money, he's who I would pick, because he is, and he was close to that pace that fell apart. And I think he deserves an upgrade for that. But the problem is that he's going to be overbet as the Derby winner into the teeth of a talented horse like Muth. So it's like, I'm so torn between these two horses, because I think that they both are legitimate contenders, but their prices are just going to be out of whack because of the narratives that surround them. One of them, a very easily digestible one, Derby winner, and the other one, all the things I pointed out about Muth. I have to play against these two horses from a win standpoint, but man, it feels pretty dirty trying to do so, because I think they're both pretty darn good and they both make some sense. I just don't think they're as good as their price is going to be.
I'll tell you what, as folks who work in horse racing and are big horse racing fans, you almost have a built-in emotional hedge. If Mystic Dan wins, it's going to be a real fun 3 weeks to Belmont. Maybe I don't need to cash a bet on him in this race. I'll be happy anyway if he can get the job done, and he's certainly not out of it, but I tend to agree. Probably not where the value lies. Number six, Seize the Gray, is interesting. He reminds me of Mystic Dan in that this is a horse that had kind of a perfect trip, but from a strictly dynamics point of view, when you look how close he was in the Pat Day Mile, you could upgrade him several points. In fact, Timeform US gave him a really big upgrade for how close he was to that pace in the Pat Day Mile, a bigger upgrade than they gave Mystic Dan for same. The reality is the race didn't come back that fast, and he's another one I sort of can't shake the idea that last time was the time. But in the UK prices right now at 20-1, would I blame anybody who wanted to take a shot that this horse could keep improving? No, I would not argue with them, but he's not exactly for me. Do you see much with Seize the Gray?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, I get it. You know, to be fair, from a speed standpoint, he's not that far off. And we've talked about how I think horses run well. I mean, I know that we have this narrative about people not wanting to run back in the Preakness in 2 weeks. I don't think it's because they don't. I don't think it's because they don't think they run well off of 2 weeks of rest. I think that they feel like, why do that when I can wait 5 weeks for this or 6 weeks for that or 8 weeks for this? I think the racing calendar is why people probably skip the Preakness. I don't think it has anything to do with the 2 weeks. And so I think Seize the Gray could run well off of that. He was in good form, and I think horses off 2 weeks will stay in good form. And I think he'll run well enough. I just think he's too slow to beat some of these top horses, but definitely a horse, you know, if you're playing that Grand Three thing, one that you might want to consider using in your superfectas to try to, especially I'm assuming that there's some value to getting some unique superfectas too, as people kind of get whittled away. Having Seize the Gray in second or third or something like that, I think is definitely interesting.
Speaking of horses coming back in 2 weeks, speaking of horses trained by Dwayne Lucas, let's talk about Just Steel. Just Steel reminds me a little tiny bit of an old school Preakness winner, a horse called Oxbow. He was contesting the pace at a fast-paced Derby and ended up far back in the field, and then came back in 2 weeks and was able to do a lot better on the lead. Here's the problem, though. Oxbow was able to get an uncontested lead back in that, whatever it was, 2013 Derby. Just Steel's going to have company on the lead, and ultimately, that's why I have to side against him. But it's not like I'd fall out of my chair or anything if the pace isn't what's expected here and he were to do well. I think the worst news for Just Steel is you've got two Bob Baffert runners, one of whom is surely going to be sent for the front, I would think, or at least sitting right off this one's hind. Ultimately, I sided against Just Steel, but I thought it was worth making that pace point about him. What do you think about this one and his chances?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you probably want him from a betting standpoint more than Catching Freedom. Not that you think that I think that he's going to win more races than Catching Freedom, but his price, I think, would kind of pay for that differentiation. He reminds me a little bit of Palace Malice, too, right? A horse that got hooked up in a fast pace and completely fell apart. Palace Malice was 12th in that Derby, came back and won the Belmont, not the Preakness, but I think that a horse involved in the pace has an opportunity to run better. I just don't think he's fast enough, and I think that he ran so poorly, and he's going to have to really deal with some other pace horses, like you said. I don't need Just Steel, but I think that I would probably prefer him to Catching Freedom.
Let's talk about Tuscan Gold, the 8 runner. This is a horse that ran pretty well, I think, all things considered, in that Louisiana Derby. Best of speeds, got run down by two closers in the form of Catching Freedom and Honor Marie, both of whom actually ran okay, I think, on balance in the Derby, enough to make me think that that Louisiana Derby is decent form. Chad Brown has a terrific record skipping the Derby and coming back in the Preakness. He's won with that move a couple of times, and with cloud computing and early voting. And then last year, Blazing Sevens ran a huge race under similar circumstances. He clearly has a sort of a wise guy idea with coming and targeting this race rather than the Derby with some of his horses that are maybe, you know, a cut below the best horses in his barn. The bad news, such as it is for Tuscan Gold, is I think this is probably a better Preakness than many people expected. Still, this is a horse I think is worth discussing a little bit.
Yeah, look, this is going to be, we didn't talk about this production meeting in the show. I'm kind of picking two horses to win. It's this one, and there's only one left after that, so you can figure out the rest. I just feel like this horse has upside, has an opportunity to take another step forward, having all this time in between his races, not having the wears and tears of what the Kentucky Derby is, and not having the resume that Muth has. Muth's been running since he was a two-year-old, and has, so I just think that what we could expect from Tuscan Gold could be significantly better than what we've seen from him. I feel like the rest of the horses, we kind of know who they are. Yeah, there's a little bit of improvement that can be had, but we kind of know who they are. I think Tuscan Gold could take another step forward, and I think will be a price that makes you feel warm and fuzzy about trying to beat two nice horses in Muth and Mystic Dan.
We've got one more horse to talk about, and then we'll do our sort of final conclusion for this show. But one other thing I want to tell you about, another free opportunity to win some money. ContestJockey.com is having an event on Saturday. It is absolutely free to play. You go to ContestJockey.com, create an account, enter the game. And the prize money, we got two things in the prize pool for this. One is bets on the last race on this Preakness card, which is pretty cool, I think. It's a thoroughbred race, the get-out race. You can, if you finish in, I think it's going to be the top three, you're going to have a chance to win a free bet. We'll get you hooked up, and we'll fire some money in for you on this last thoroughbred race. I think it's going to be a wild and fun betting pool in this. You can call it the get-out race. You can call it the top-up race, whatever you want to call it. But there's money on the line. And if you finish in the top 10% of the contest, you're going to get a free month of In the Money Plus, which is our service where you get extra podcasts, digestive tips from all the shows, etc. Extra written content. I mentioned Justin Christine before. We're just dropping on In the Money Plus today his full trip notes for both the Oaks and Derby. Lots of great additional content via In the Money Plus. Go to ContestJockey.com and sign up for that free event today. The ninth and final runner in this year's Preakness is number 9, Imagination. This horse was a heavy favorite in the Santa Anita Derby. He was game and fought all the way to the line, but he could not beat Stronghold. Stronghold came back to run in the Derby. I don't think he ran terribly, really. He was in the hunt at the pace call and really kind of ran to me like a horse who just didn't want to go that far. But I'm not willing to condemn the form of the Santa Anita Derby based on that. On pace figures, you'd think this horse might be able to be out there setting the early fractions. Frankie Dettori in the irons here, an aggressive rider. He's an interesting one. I know you like him, so I'll let you make the proper case.
Yeah, it's not really it's more of an alternative to the two horses that I think are going to be over bet, right? And if Tuscan Gold isn't fire, I'd like to have a little Imagination as well. Imagination just looks a lot like National Treasure, right? The National Treasure was fourth in the Santa Anita Derby, had to skip Santa Anita Derby, had to skip the Kentucky Derby, shows up and wins the Preakness. I feel very similar about Imagination, who was second in the Santa Anita Derby, had to skip the Kentucky Derby, now shows up in the Preakness. And the other main speed horse, I think, is Muth. They're not going to ding-dong with each other. I don't think that any of these other horses have the early speed to keep up with whichever one of those is sent aggressively to the front. And I would project that when they turn for home, Imagination will be on the lead. And who knows? Maybe he loves the mile and 3/16. Maybe he loved the time in between races. Maybe he grew up and got faster. And at a nice price, he could maybe wire this field. So I think both of those horses offer a lot of value in terms of the win pool because the other two are just going to be overbet.
I'm not ruling out doing a lot with Muth depending on what the price is. Interestingly, Jonathan, I think, thinks he's a more likely winner than I do, but I'm not convinced that we're not going to get a 6-5, 7-5, 3-2 kind of price, which would allow me to get a little more around him. But I'm not picking him. For this video, for my official selection in the race, I'm going to go with Tuscan Gold.
I think this horse is going to be higher than 6-1. And this is a horse that I think you can probably key things around in first, second, and third. We're going to get much more into a discussion of wagering strategy on our other videos. We encourage you to subscribe to the In the Money Media YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. Also, check us out on the podcast side, wherever you get your shows. In the Money Players podcast, we'll have that pro player show, and we're going to have our pick five show as well. JK, a closing thought before we get out of here.
Look at that. Got stuck on mute at the very end. Get your preak on. It's one of my favorite lines ever. Get your preak on.
That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I want to thank all of today's guests, as well as our founding partners at 10 Strike Racing. Going to get to hang with some of the 10 Strike crew this weekend. Really looking forward to that. As well as Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga, doing great work up in Saratoga, helping humans and helping horses. InTheMoneyPodcast.com/horses to learn more about that. We got to get Kim Weir on for an update soon. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you for listening, making these shows so much fun to do. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos.